It's a real pleasure. And I don't know what humility is, but I'll say with humility, it's a real pleasure to introduce to you a real AA who walks like he talks. Norm A. from Monrovia, is that it? Yeah, that's close to it.
Thank you very much, Franklin. Good evening, folks. My name is Monrovia, and I'm an alcoholic. And I certainly am very happy to be here this evening. And you wouldn't believe it if I told you what had gone on the last 2 weeks. It would really, it would put something you'd see on the television to shame. But as a matter of fact, it was at 9:30 last night. I got some news, and it was of a personal nature, and it didn't look like I was going to be able to make it. But I waited another 3 hours, and I was sure now that I wasn't going to be able to make it. And I called Tom at 12:30 our time, and I said, I can't make it. You better get a substitute. And by 8:15, the problem that I had surfaced and it eliminated itself, so as to speak. And I called the airport and I changed my reservations and got down to the airport, and they had canceled my reservation. And I had to take the next plane out, which got down here in Dallas, and I couldn't make a connection to get out here. And I pulled in there at 4 o'clock, and if it hadn't been for my Fred David, it's a no-sweat man will make it, and he let the hammer down, and I'm here, and I still can't believe it. It is absolutely incredible. I'm very happy to be here, and I certainly want to thank Tom and Ted for the invitation to be here and participate, have the opportunity to share my experience and strength and hope with people that I might get another day, too. I would also like to welcome any and all new people who may be here tonight for your first, second, or third meeting, your first convention, and your first 30, 40 days around Alcoholics Anonymous. It goes without saying that we're very happy to have you, that you're now aware of the fact that you've associated yourself with one of the most popular, unpopular fellowships in the world. You know, nobody begins his life wanting to become an alcoholic and a member of Alcoholics Anonymous. You know, there's not a hell of a lot of class to it, frankly, you know, or no status. You know, they didn't issue out pins when I come in. You said, well, you're a 32nd degree alcoholic. You run around town and show everybody your pin, you know. And they were all delighted, and they dropped over to a dead faint. Well, no, that isn't the way it all began, you know. I wasn't happy coming to Alcoholics Anonymous. And I don't think, you know, any full-blown alkie out there in the street, he's happy coming to AA, you know. He doesn't want to get here. He goes to any length not to get here, an alcoholic. He will, you know, change jobs, he changes environment, he changes wives, he goes to jail. A son die. You know, I'm going to AA, I'd rather die. And he dies out there, you know, before he'll come to Alcoholics Anonymous. So it's a very unpopular fellowship. No alcoholic wants to get here. But once he gets here, why, several things start to happen right away. Like, he finds out that he never has to take another drink again if he doesn't want to. Right away, he finds that he's surrounded by a group of people who will know most everything about him. He'll still accept him, who are not necessarily interested in where he's been or where he's trying to go, but they're damned interested in what he's trying to do today. And that's a hell of a break for an alcoholic, you know. When I was out there drinking, who was interested in me? Nobody was, unless they heard I was going to jail or leaving town. Then the world was delighted over that. Other than that, you know, nobody cared. But I came to the program, and people were interested in me. They said, man, if you want to do something about that drinking, use that nickel therapy. Put the money in the phone and make the call. And make the call before you take the drink. And if you'll do that, I'll be down there. And I put the nickels in the phones, and I made the calls, and people came down to see me. And they sat there not with pity and with hate that I've been used to all my life, but they sat there with compassion, with understanding. They were guys from AA. And that's got to be the best deal I ever had in my life. And I'm a guy that looked half the world trying to find the best deal, you see. And I didn't find it until I got here, until I was subjected to this great group of people that call themselves Alcoholics Anonymous. And for the benefit of the new people that are here tonight, in qualification of that initial statement I made, I'm an alcoholic. And I'm not by any stretch of the imagination an authority, a consultant, or a counselor on the program Alcoholics Anonymous. I'm an example, good or bad, that AA works. That it has been necessary for me to take a drink, steal anything, or go to jail now for over 22 years. I'm sure that nobody here tonight was really overly impressed with that. And frankly, I'm a little upset. I'm impressed with it, obviously, or I'd have never brought it up, you see. Not all of that, hell, you never know. We might get a pension program going in AA. And if we do, why, Paul and I want to get credit for all our time. So we bring it up every time we have the opportunity, you know, sure. And once you got over that 20 years, they say, you know, you're 10 years, you're vested, man. You got it on the front end. So We like to talk about it, but to the new people, it's a difficult thing. You hear somebody say he hasn't had any booze now for over 22 years, and it's difficult to digest that. I can remember the first AA meeting I went to. I was 29 years old. I'm sitting there, and incidentally, to save you any mental calculations, I'm 51. I was sitting there in that first AA meeting, and this man made a profound statement. He said, I haven't had a drink for 9.5 years. And I like to fell out of the chair, 9.5 years, My God, that guy's got to be the biggest liar I've ever heard. You know, how in the hell can a guy operate out there in that rotten jungle for 9.5 years and not drink? With all the pressure and all the heat, and he's got to meet these responsibilities. And all I could think about was 9.5 years. I kept putting it into one great big bunch. For 9.5 years, my life's over. For 9.5 years, what the hell will I do with all my time? For 9.5 years, what are my friends going to do if I'm not there to guide them through life? They'll probably all flounder out there. That's what'll happen for the next 9.5 years. I just can't make it out there. And I didn't think that I could until I heard somebody say one day, but it's not a 9.5 year program, Norm, it's a one day at a time program, and that's the way it is. I learned a long time ago that if you take care of the day, chances are the week's going to take care of itself. And will a month and will a year, and before you know it, well, hell, 22 have run by. And it seems like yesterday that I sat there in those early AA meetings going through the mental gymnastics of, why am I here? Of all the things I could have been, why the hell am I an alcoholic? It wasn't a vocation, you know that. I didn't go down to my high school counselor and he said, Norm, what would you like to be? I said, I'd like to be an alcoholic. He said, marvelous, we got a new program for jackasses like you. So I went out and I ripped up the city out there for 15 years and I ended up in AA. I had the curiosity about it. I had the rationalization. I sat there and started to rationalize, the reason I'm an alcoholic is I come from a heavy drinking family. I come from a big drinking family and a big family. My people are Irish and Italian. And we know a lot about booze. We know how to make it and how to drink it. And my people are still out there making it and drinking it, And yet nobody is alcoholic in the family but me. And that upset the hell out of me, frankly. I thought, why have I been given the cross to carry that whole rotten family when I'm the best in there? There's no question about that. Well, you give that a little more thought, and you come to find out that being Irish and Italian, all that really means is you're not overly intelligent. You see, that's where it all ends. Has no bearing on your alcoholism. Then I got to thinking about maybe the environment, and the fact I'm born and raised in L.A., and anybody born and raised in East L.A., he's got to be hacked up one way or another, and that's probably right. But it doesn't necessarily mean you're going to have a drinking problem. I know a lot of guys that came out of Los Angeles, born and raised there, they've never had a problem in their life. They've never been drunk and they've never been to jail. So evidently, the environment, if you're new, maybe your problem is similar to mine. The environment wasn't the problem. The nationality isn't the problem. My parents aren't the problem. The schools I attended aren't the problem. My problem, when I figured this out by myself, was the booze. That was my problem. Man, wasn't that what a giant decision that was on my behalf. I drank that whiskey out there as hard and as fast as I could drink it. And somewhere in that lottery of my life, I crossed the invisible line we speak about in AA. From the social aspect of drinking into the compulsive area, where one's too many and 1,000 are enough. Where I'm looking for the answer to living out there in a quart of whiskey and I just can't find it. Where my life revolves around booze, people that sell it and people that drink it. And I liked it. I liked sitting there drinking that booze. I was not alcoholic in the beginning. I didn't have a lot of trouble with it. I kind of worked with that deal. But after I had crossed that invisible line they spoke about, after I'd have that 6 or 7 drinks, there wasn't enough in town. I just want to keep going. But I'm periodic. I'm made periodic by a lot of things. I'm made periodic by the finances, the economics of it. I could never lay my hands on enough money to buy all the whiskey I wanted. I was made periodic by jails. It was difficult to buy when I was in jail. I was made periodic by a red-headed Irish wife. I married a woman who had a violent temper, a rotten disposition, and yelled at me all the time. Well, that upsets the hell out of you. Alcoholics are very sensitive people. And you're out there drunk for 3 or 4 days, and you come home and you're tired. You've been very busy out there. And you walk in the house, and you want a little love, affection, and understanding. Isn't that right? Hello, baby, how are you? And from 20 feet, she's gone, you're drunk again. Before she'd smell my breath, I was always dumbfounded. How in the hell does she know I've been drinking? I used to call her on the phone, and she'd say, you're drunk, aren't you? And I'd jump out of that phone booth, and I'd look around, where in the hell is that guy? I was sure she had somebody follow me around town. Well, automatically, as soon as I got in the house, I'm on the defensive. Starting out with that, you're drunk again. We had quite a dialogue. I'd say, who, me? And she'd say, yeah, you. And I'd say, do you know who you're talking to? Huh? Boy, that used to get her right there. She'd mimic me as only the way them Irish could do it. Do I know who I'm talking to? You know. Oh. Sometimes that happens when you have your best friend with you. Your new business partner, you've invited him home, yeah. Met him in the saloon last night. There you stand, the blind leading the blind. You know,
you embarrassed me in front of my best friend. And I couldn't think of his name, you know. If she'd say, you take old best friend and get the hell out of here, that's what you do.
And I'd say, you shut that Irish mouth now. And she'd throw all my clothes out. And I'd pick up the clothes and I'd pack them out to the car. And I'd let the neighbors know I was going. You know, I'm leaving, neighbors. Honk, honk the horn and you drive away. Like everybody cared that you were leaving, you see. Well, you can understand how these things would make a man periodic. You continue to drink, and you continue to apply the pressure. And the more pressure, then the more heat gets on you. And then you lose certain privileges around the house, too. And the more heat you get on, the more privileges are taken away. And pretty soon, there you are in your own house, and you got no privileges. It's a hell of a way to operate. So to get reinstated, why, you get sober, you get the heat off, and then bam, you go back out and you get drunk again, you see. Well, this was the vicious circle. This is the way that I operated. And this would be, I suppose, why I would list myself as a periodic, because there were many times, places, and things in my life that required that I get sober, but I never wanted to. And if you're new, maybe your problem is similar to mine. Maybe it was the booze. Maybe your personality is like mine. I got that alky personality. I'm the rationalizer, a justifier, a compromiser, and I got a rotten attitude. And you know, you don't need a hell of a lot more than that. Now, I got that lousy outlook on living all my life. Travel half the world and half my life, making a complete ass of myself. Spend money I didn't have, buying things I didn't need, trying to impress people I didn't like. And I think that's the story of my life on most alcoholics. You know, you run all over hell, laying it on the world, letting them know you're something you ain't. You know, telling this man I am something that I couldn't be, probably didn't want to be, don't know what it is when you got right down to it. But it was important to sit around them gin mills and talk to the high rollers and be a high roller. And when the guy says to me, you know, what do you do, Norm? Well, man, I thought you knew. I do it all out there. That's what I do. Hell yeah, I'm the general manager of the universe, buddy. That's what I am out there, yeah. It was important to be those people. I might be the guy driving the city in the summertime with the windows rolled up in my car to make everybody think I had an air conditioner, you know. It was important to impress people, to be something I wasn't. And I came to the program and I found out those things are not necessary. I come to the program and found out, hell, all I've ever wanted to be in my whole life is to be myself. Now, if I don't get any more than that, and the sobriety that I've enjoyed here in AA, I can say without reservation that I'm overpaid, because I have been able to spend a lot of days out there on that city street, and all I've had to be is me. I haven't had to justify my existence nor compromise my life. I haven't had to remember what I said yesterday or what I did yesterday because I was cold sober. I can be me. And if you're new here this evening, I highly suggest that you grab the package that's available to you here. You take it on out there tomorrow and you spend the day out there just being yourself. It's an experience that no alcoholic should be without. As to what I was like, I've told you a great deal about it. I'm a guy with an attitude problem, and if you got an attitude problem, you got a hell of a problem, because, you know, life and living is a matter of attitude, isn't it? You know, I wake up in the morning, got a rotten attitude, I got a rotten day out there. If I don't change it, I got a rotten week, and then it's a month, and then pretty soon it's a year. Everything today, more so probably than any time in my life, is a matter of attitude. It all begins right here. The biggest enemy Norm ever had has always been Norm. Everywhere Norm goes, you know what I mean? All the trouble, it starts right here. The attitudes are what put me in jail long before I ever had a drink. I opened up the midnight auto supply out there in the San Gabriel Valley. You see, I happen to be a thief by trade. I'm an alcoholic by absorption. That's the long of the short, you know. Start stealing, kind of for the fun of it. And then found out I'd make a little money. And the overhead is right. You know, the numbers are there. You have no overhead, and everything you turn is 100% profit. How the hell are you going to beat that? Well, not only that, I was cut for the business. It started with the hubcaps, and it moved on out. We started getting other car accessories. Then it got to be a job together off all that crap. We just stole the whole car, you know. Man, that business shot on out. Yeah. I was considered one of the finest car thieves that ever come out of the San Gabriel Valley. And I'll tell you, man, you really had to move out there to get ranked up in the top 10 in those days. In the 30s, we had some pretty good hookers out there. So it kind of gave me a sense of well-being, a cut for the business. Never lost a minute of sleep over anything I ever took in my life. I felt if you're jerky enough to park your car out there, buddy, you're asking for trouble. That's the way it is. Well, eventually I was arrested. It's inevitable. It was illegal, you know. More policemen than thieves. And I stood in front of my first judge who was given 7 years to Whittier Reformatory. But through the efforts of maybe my own people, I'm sure it was my own people, the juice got in. I got released. I wasn't out there in Whittier long enough to wash my face. And I was released, put on probation, and came back to L.A. I'm still looking for that synthetic existence out there, the fantasy land. Well, booze is a natural. It'll get you into the fantasy land. You can be up there and dream and be all things for all people. Started about 1940. It was Easter week in L.A. Balboa Beach, the Rendezvous Ballroom, Stan Kenton and Padre Beer. Man, it was a hell of a deal. You'd suck on that old Padre and get a buzz on you. You know, I'd go in the dance hall and act four times drunker than what you were and dance with the dollies and breathe on them. You know, let them know. Got little booze out there, girls. You know, the big attitude. And had a hell of a lot of fun. A lot of fun in the beginning. I wasn't an alcoholic. No, not then. I got to work, as I mentioned. I worked at it. I moved out of that Padre Beer into that Rainier Ale, the old Green Death, and from the Green Death, I moved right down to whiskey. And let me tell you what I found. When I got the whiskey, I found the greatest thing made since money and girls, because that whiskey will do it all. Boy, that whiskey drinking, you just can't beat it. The first drink you take, it brings you to attention. Right now, that's what I liked about that whiskey. Man, it gets it moving. It gets you downtown. Boy, I want to get downtown now. And that whiskey got you downtown right now. That's what I like, yeah. Not only that, when you were drinking that 10 high, you never got the feeling you were being cheated either, I'll tell you that. I broke in on that old 10 high. You felt every loving drop going down, man. That baby burn going and it burn coming. It used to come up and run out my nose a lot, you know. In the early days when you're training out there, huddle, gag, it comes up your nose and makes your eyes water. And one of your close friends going, you know, ain't that good? No, oh, yes, it is. It's good. I couldn't breathe. That's how good that stuff was. But if you're new, I'm going to pass on to you what was passed on to me. There's a lot of fringe benefits of drinking cheap whiskey. A guy in AA told me that years ago. He said, man, when you throw it up, you don't lose much. Makes a lot of sense. You're out there drinking that heavy whiskey today. $10 a pop, huh? Ooh, $10. There she goes. What could be worse than looking on the ground? There's $10, you know, yeah. Hell, that's enough to make an alcoholic sick all over again to see her out there. So, I just pass that on to you. It was passed on to me. In the event you want to go back out and do some more drinking, why, they prepare you for all these good things, I suppose. But don't get me wrong. I drank a lot of expensive whiskey in my life, too. But after a half a dozen drinks, how the hell could you tell the difference? Yeah, whether it was expensive or it was cheap, and who cares? If you have a half a dozen drinks, and a guy comes up to me, he says, Norm, would you like a drink? Well, you don't stand around and have a 30-minute dissertation. You say, hell yeah, let's go, yeah. The best whiskey I ever drank in my life was yours. You know that, sure. The only thing an alcoholic worries about is that guy going to run out, and is it election day? You know, other than that, who cares? Let's go get at her. Well, that whiskey started the blackouts, put me in jail again. By January of 42, I was on probation in two states. Came back to Los Angeles, had the opportunity through the probation department to join the service rather than go to jail. In January of 1942, we were in a state of war. I was in a state of shock, and that's the long and the short. I was given the choice, you know, jail or service. That's not much of a choice, and I had been in jail, as I mentioned. What's the bad deal? So I went in the United States Navy. And it was another bad decision of mine. When I got into the United States Navy, all the enemies I had in L.A. had joined the Navy the same day I did, you see. They started to dictate a lot of silly rules, regulations, and policies, and consequently, I started having a lot of trouble because I stood out there and reacted and overreacted. I felt that the Navy would soon find this buried talent I had going inside. I thought that surely I'd be the youngest lieutenant commander the Navy ever had. I was the oldest seaman they ever had, you see. I just couldn't get the damn thing going, and every time I did, I got into trouble. And it was all directly due to booze. When I wasn't drinking, I didn't have trouble, but when I was drinking, I had a hell of a lot of it. I had the court-martials. I had 3 out of 11 and a half months in a Navy prison up there on the top of Goat Island, run by the Marine Corps. I had 60, 70 days solitary confinement on bread and water. I had some other miscellaneous things that are important, but all directly due to booze, you see. I fulfilled a commitment of 4 years. I was discharged out on Christmas Eve of 45, and I came back to Los Angeles in 1946. And the reason I didn't get a kick out of the service is, like most alcoholics, I'm a hard worker. I think you can say that about 90% of the alcoholics, that they're hard workers, and they gotta be. An alcoholic has gotta work 25% harder than anybody else just to stay even out there, isn't that right? Yeah, you know, why does an alcoholic go like hell on Tuesday? He missed Monday. Hey, let's go, boy. Yeah. He really does a job out there to get that heat off. You know, he's always got the heat on. You got to get that heat off so he goes like hell. I do that in the service. Good sailor, good seaman. I had a division officer, somebody who's always going to bat for me. Consequently, I didn't get a kick out. I came back to L.A. in 46, and in 46, I heard about A.A. God moves in strange and mysterious ways, and no matter what you do or you don't do, buddy, it's going to work that way anyway. Today in my life and last night is a prime example of that. You know, no matter what I do or I don't do, this is the way it's going to be. You know, almost a predestined thing. I obviously haven't the background or the education to explain these things. I only know that things happen. In spite of myself, they happen. 1946, was an example. 1946, I have four arrests. On the fourth arrest, I stand in front of the judge. Judge says a year in a city jail, suspended, 3 years probation, get him the hell out of here. I say to myself, I'll not come back to that city again. Never will I ever drink in this town again. Well, never's a long time, and I won't. You know, that is a word I should never use, because I will sometimes, and I don't seem to have any control over it. About 2 or 3 months later, it was going so good I couldn't stand it. I'm drinking down one of the beach cities with a couple of high rollers. I commit the cardinal sin. While I'm drinking, I begin to think. That's a bad deal for an alcoholic. He should either think or drink, but don't get them both going at the same time, huh? Man, you think about the crazy things. I got to thinking about that rotten town and that lousy judge. And by God, if I want to go back to that town, I'm going back. Hell, I go back 75 miles. Went down to a joint called the Green Terrace, closed the place, got in my car, pulled out in the main drag. I couldn't have gone a half a mile, and a car pulled in front of me, and I hit it and ran from the scene of the accident. Some 3 blocks down the road, they came out of the air. They always did. They being policemen. forced my car over the curb, jerked me out, took me down, put me in the tank. I wake up in the morning, the booking slip. I find the booking slip. I'm in on a 501 felony, drunk driving, hit and run, bodily injury involved. And let me tell you, but it's the grace of God that looks after damn fools and drunks. 4 people didn't die that night. Alcoholism, I know today, is a game of seconds and inches, you know. Few inches, few seconds, snap of the finger. I'd have been over 3.5 feet on the broadside of that car. At the rate of speed I was traveling, I would have killed him. As it was, I hit the car on the back end. The car spun on the street, and there was some injury involved in it, but not to the degree that it could have been, you see. I understand that today. I understand that a man checks into the lottery of living. They give him a fistful of tickets, and they say, run. You mess up, they got to have a ticket. If you mess up enough, you tap out, and I'm tapped out. I got no tickets left. I don't stay sober from the fear of this, but I'd be a damn fool not to realize how very lucky have I been. And you know something? When it gets to Sally out there on that street today, I don't think I can stand it. I say, God, give me the strength to remember how it used to be, huh? Let me remember 46 if I think it's going tough. Let me remember how they loaded me out of that tank, and I went down in front of that judge, and he told me in no uncertain terms what kind of person I was, and he sent me to jail. Let me remember that God moved in strange ways, because in that jail, I shared a cell with a man that was going to AA. One guy got out of the bucket once a week to go to AA meetings. 250, 200 people doing time. He planted the seed. I wasn't ready for the program because I didn't have a drinking problem then. I told him that. I said, you and your brothers, you're a bunch of lousy drunks. You know, you never handle the booze. You ought to go to this AA business. But, you know, not me. Hell no, I'm a victim of unusual circumstances. That jackass pulled that car in front of me? Yeah. And I'm too young to be an alcoholic. Your case, I told him, was different. Jesus, you're 36. Now, what's left after 36, man? You're on the backside of that hill. Well, that's changed, believe me. You'll pass everything well if you stick around long enough. But then, of course, now, I was too young. And I promptly forgot him, and I went out the road, and I went on my way. And 8.5 years later, I picked up a telephone, and I'm looking for a guy named Sully I'd shared a cell with. And an outfit called Alcoholics Anonymous. And I found the program. And maybe 5 or 6 years later, why, I'd heard through the grapevine that my friend had gone back to drinking. They said he had 3 years of sobriety, Norm, and he went back to drinking, and he couldn't quit. And when they finally picked him up, he was walking on his heels. He's got a wet brain, and they put him in the Camarillo Hospital, and he's up there for life, Norm. And that's the way it is. And so I went on my way and forgot one more time. And here, maybe it was 4 years ago last December, or 3 years ago. It doesn't really make any difference. It's not significant, the time. But I was in a meeting, it was a Sunday morning, and I was in my town. I looked down the front row, and sitting in the front row was a guy named Sully. I'd shared a cell with him maybe 27 years ago, and I thought, you know, God moves in strange and mysterious ways, and the seed that was planted is now coming home again, maybe. And when the meeting was over, I says, man, how's it going? He says, great, I got 9 weeks, Norm. I just got out of the county hospital. I said, let's get to some meetings. Let me lay some on you. Let me show you what's going down. You're the first sponsor I ever had. He said, I'll call you. And he didn't. And last year he went back out to the gates of insanity or death. I don't know why. I don't know why there has to be the percentages. There's some reasoning for it, as there is reasonings that God moves in these strange and mysterious ways. Well, in that 8.5 year period of time, obviously I drank all the whiskey I could get my hands on. Went to work for one of the largest corporations in the world in the construction business. They were in the concrete pipe business. The timing was right. I was at the right place at the right time, and the jobs got bigger and better. The corporation was owned and operated by 3 Yugoslavians that came from the old country. They got here with about 15 cents and couldn't speak English. And in 1951, why, they sold the corporation out. They got $15 million for it after taxes, and they swore to God they did it with hard work and good whiskey. So you know I am working with the right outfit, Matt. Everything moves my way. My life is cycles, and the cycles are running right. I'm right place, right time. The jobs are bigger and better than the money, and I need the money. I got a big overhead by now. Met and married this red-headed Irish woman. She's pregnant every other year. Got a hell of an overhead here. It was incredible. You know, that marriage got off to the rocky start. My friend says, you know, married woman's got a decent job. You got your double income. Well, this chick had a good job. Things were going our way. 3 months later, I walk in the house. She says, Norm, I'm pregnant. I got to quit my job. I thought the house come down on me, you know. And I asked her if she was, you know, sure about it. Suggested maybe another doctor. But she said, no, this is the way it is. Well, you know, an alcoholic, once he's up against the wall, well, he gets pretty big hearted. And I thought, well, that caper takes about 9 months, and we'll give her 2 to get on her feet, and then we'll get the rotten job back again, and then everything's going to be like it was. I said, you know, that was 29 years ago. That woman ain't turned a tap since that day. Now, she got herself in that shape 8 times. It was incredible. I used to sit around the bar shows and think, you know, Jesus, I'm rarely home anymore either. You know, there she goes. St. Luke's, she's got to go again. Yeah. Well, you see, I've got a big overhead. And I'm a bar drinker, and a bar drinker packs a hell of an overhead. Not like a home drinker. Home drinker is a low overhead drinker. But you know, a home drinker really never reaches his full potential. You know, who's around the house to tell how good you are, home drinker, huh? Her, and her don't believe any of it anyway, does she? No. But man, if you're a bar drinker, you can get out them saloons and you can let the world know how good you are. Oh God, I like them joints. I like the dark lights and the rotten music that hammered at you. Like that smell, you know, kind of blew your sinuses out when you walked in, huh? Love them intellectual giants I met there. About midnight, you never met a guy working for wages. We're all high rollers. We're talking in millions and spending in thousands, and we ain't got $10, but we talk a hell of a lot about it. We build the castles in the air and form the corporations and put partnerships together and lie all night long. And when you get tired of talking and lying to each other, you can sit there and mesmerize yourself with that Maybelline look. You get Maybelline-y. You look, you know, you look in that mirror. They put mirrors in bars so that alcoholics can get Maybelline-y. They get that wide eye, you know. You devil, you know. It's like you never saw yourself. There you are, yes. Good looking, well built. You notice that. Bringing the drink. Oh, Jesus, look at that arm, too. Yeah. You're a killer. 155 ringing wet in them days. I couldn't lick my lips, let alone anybody else, you know. Man, but don't that whiskey bring it out, huh? It makes you a lover and a killer. You're sitting there, you know, some nights you can't remember what you are. Well, a lover, a killer, yes. You wonder why all the dollies aren't down there, huh? You got that smiling Frankie Gordon suit on. You got $30, you know, 30 cents or 50 cents worth of whiskey all down the front of you there. If you like chili, you got chili down the front of you, huh? I smell bad and I can't talk. I used to drink myself up to that mumbling, you know. If you're a snuff dipper, you got that old Copenhagen running down there, you know. It's the most romantic 30 minutes of the alcoholic's life as he sits there. And that's all it is. Yeah, it's all over. You got to go to the men's room. It's all over. You forget about the step. Take that giant step off the bar. Kludge in the middle of the floor. Or you get into the men's room and it's a pay toilet, huh? Oh, God, those pay toilets, they are a plot against alcoholics. You never have the right change, you know. You can't get in, and you got to go. So if nobody's there, you kind of slide under the door, huh? There's got to be some old door sliders here tonight, I'm sure.
It's degrading for a high roller going in out of the door, you know. Yeah. Takes the press out of your suit, too, doesn't it? And coming out, there's maybe a couple of guys waiting. Here he comes, you know. Yeah. Now you're embarrassed. You've got to leave. And so you leave this place to go on to some other place to spread this sunshine, providing you can find your car. But you've lost it, you know. And you wander around in those parking lots. A lot of car losers in AA. They wander you. You know, you can tell a car loser around 1 o'clock in the morning. He's wandering around. He's got that wide-eyed look. You get... It's an emotional thing with an alcoholic. You know, sometimes you call home to your wife. Did you take my car again? You know? I think one of the highlights of an alcoholic's life is the night that he finds these cars. Jesus, it's like a spiritual experience. You're walking down the street, there's my car. Oh, Jesus. It hasn't been impounded. There, God, I love you, car, yes. You open the door and get in and go to bed in there, huh? The old car sleeper, there he goes.
That's why Elkie's got a lot of neck trouble. From having her head screwed up under the armrest all night. And the door handle in your ear, huh? Wake up 4 o'clock in the morning, you're sick, you think your window's down, it's up. Ooh, you're right. Did you ever try to throw up through your old window? Ooh, you know. Boy, that'll bring you to attention, I'll tell you. Or on your dashboard. I had a 51 Ford. They're bad for alcoholics. You got them little holes in the dashboard. You got to get in and get it all out. Oh, Jesus. And yet you'd sit there and I'd say to myself time after time, you know, drinking's fun. Yes, I'm having a good time. I enjoy throwing up in my car. The problem is I got a lot of bad whiskey around L.A. Once I get out of L.A., it's going to be different. Yeah, people don't like me in L.A. either. I'm going to get back down to Big Spring, Texas. Man, did they love me in Big Spring. Or was it Dallas where they loved me? Or El Paso? Or Wichita Falls? Or maybe it was Moses Lake, Washington? Or Seattle? Albuquerque or Tucson? It was always going to be different once I got back down there. It was going to be all right down there. And I kept going back down there, and it was surely different. It was always worse. But I couldn't believe it. As most alcoholics, you take it on down the road to the gates of insanity or death, trying to get the handle on it. Trying to drink like my old man and my brothers and the people I'm working with. I think someday, somewhere, it's going to come to pass. And as I trudged down that road, why, the whiskey took away every loving thing I owned, if anything, to me. The day arrived when I drive home to the house where I live. I walk in, and there stands Red, and Red ain't sore at me today. She just looks at me and says, Norm, you're a drunken bum, Norm. You'll never live to be 35 years old, Norm. You're drinking yourself to death. And the kids are neurotic here because of you. And you come in and you tear up the house and you wave the gun around. And one night the gun goes off and somebody dies, Norm. And Norm, I've spent a lifetime sitting here looking through the front room window waiting to see your car come home. What a hell of a way to live. Night after night after night, I wait to see your car come in and you don't come and I die a little more. And you drug me down in that gutter and the kids as deep as you're going to get us. And it's necessary that I have you put out. I've called an attorney. I've asked for separate maintenance. I've put a restraining order against you. And you don't live here. And please leave our house. And then the paradoxical statement. She says, Norm, I'll always love you. But you tore out all the feeling. I got no feeling for you one way or another. I just want you the hell and gone. And so you get out and you drive away and you say to yourself, the phrase that each and every alcoholic has said that's been in this position, you know, why me? I say, God, why me? Why not Charlie and Bill? You know, them bums, they don't even work. But you know what I know. You drink enough booze long enough and hard enough if you're an alcoholic. It's just a matter of time until it gets every loving thing you got, you own, that means anything to you. Sure, there are cases, not so isolated anymore, but there used to be. More and more people are coming in, and they've got everything going with them. They haven't lost it all out there. They still got the iron and the house and the woman. But if you're new, this isn't something we can guarantee you. You see, what we have to offer here in Alcoholics Anonymous is sobriety and a way of life. And you're going to be better at whatever you're doing. We don't guarantee you're going to make that ton of scratch or drive the big iron or the big house or the woman is ever calling you home or your man or whatever the case may be. We say sobriety and a way of life, buddy, and if you're a ditch digger, you're going to be a better ditch digger. Yes, this is what we have to offer in Alcoholics Anonymous. And as I say, there are these cases where the people come in and they're together, and the man and these women. and you see a man and a woman coming in and they're still together, this is a miracle, one of the greatest miracles in Alcoholics Anonymous when they come to their first meeting. You look at that guy and he's sick and he's hung out, and you look at that woman and she's sick too, but in a different way, and in her eyes is a story, you can't deny it. He says, you know, this jackass has tried everything in the world and it won't work. And I'm sure this ain't going to work either. And then you see the same couple coming through the same door. It's a couple of months later, and the guy's kind of sharped out now. And the woman, she's changed, and in her eyes is a new story. And the story says, you know something, we're happier than we've ever been in our life. This miracle that is performed here in Alcoholics Anonymous. Yes, to the new people, this can happen. But this isn't something, you see, that we can guarantee you. What we have is the sobriety, is the way of life, is your self-respect. If you'll stick around and buy the package, your self-respect. Now, that's a hell of a deal. You know, the sweetest thing I ever owned in my life was my self-respect. And when that man walked into my life one day, he says, I know him. You've abused the privilege of owning it. He took it away. He took away my self-respect. He took it all. Men spend hundreds and thousands and millions trying to buy self-respect out there. No deal. You can't check it out at some supermarket. No, self-respect is a commodity. I guess you're born with it, and you take care of it, and you don't abuse it, and you got it. If you drink maybe like me, you lose it. And if you come to the program and you buy the package, why, you get reinstated. Back together with it. How lucky are we, the second time in one lifetime, to have my self-respect. If I had to isolate one thing that brought me to the program of Alcoholics Anonymous, I'm sure it was an aggregate total of many, but if I had to isolate one thing, I would say it was the day I realized that I got no self-respect, that I got nothing going inside here, that I'm totally sick and tired of the business, that I can't even wash my face because I got to look at me. That would be the moment, I suppose, that the total surrender in my life, that moment I want to believe was February of 54. I got bit as far as I wanted to go. I got up off of the floor and I walked in and I picked up the telephone and I called the central office in Los Angeles and I talked to a guy over there and he says, you got a drinking problem? I says, I have. He said, you want to do something about it? I says, I do. He said, here's some phone numbers, start calling, and I did. And pretty soon I got a hold of a guy and he came out to see me. And my sponsor was one of these hard-hearted sponsors. You know the kind, go to school for hard-hearted sponsors, you know. Geez. I didn't like this guy right off the bat. He walked in there and he sat down and he paralleled everything with the booze. You know, he said, you went to any length to get the booze. And then, you know, he'd ask you a question, then he'd answer it. You know, yes, you did. I know you went to any length to get the booze. And he was right. But I didn't want to admit that this was right. I went to any length to get it. I lied and cheated and I conned and I stole. And I drove miles for it. Example down in, when I was in Big Spring, it was a dry county. I used to have to drive to Odessa or down to San Angelo to get legal whiskey. And I would go to any length and drive any miles to get that whiskey. He was right. But that day, I didn't want to admit that. That day, I sat there and listened to what he had to say. He said, there's guys in the city here that pick you up and take you to meetings. But that's a softer, easier way. If you want it, come and get it. Get in your car and drive. And frankly, if you got a car, you're not ready. But he did say that they took chances on guys with cars from time to time. And they would be willing to go with me. He did say that I was very young. He said I was impatient as hell. He could tell just by looking at me. He said, you think you're going to get this thing back right now? He said, I want to tell you something, sonny. It took you 15 years to get yourself down there in the bottom of that chute. It's going to take you 15 years to get yourself back out. You got into it one day at a time, and you're coming back out one day at a time. He said, there's guys that cut it maybe 4, 5, 6 years, but he said he didn't think I would. He says, guys, with your kind of attitude, takes a long time. So don't plan on it. He said, if you want what we have, man, come and get it. If you haven't got the car, then take the bus, and if you haven't got bus money, the walk isn't bad. Well, now, I don't mean that this is the way it should be. I don't think that this is necessary. He did. And for me, this is all right. Most everything in my entire life, I suppose, has been the hard way. Why not Alcoholics Anonymous? So, by golly, I got in my car that night, and I drove down to that Temple City meeting, and I was thinking I would like to get down there early and see him coming in the parking lot and crush him with my car. That's what I would like to do. But on the way to the first meeting, you know, a lot of things happen. You get to wondering about what do they do in AA? Am I going to have to sign some papers? Am I going to have to take a pledge? Am I going to see somebody that knows me? Jesus, they'll find out I drink, and I don't want that. And then I got to wondering if they had a credit union in AA. I thought, Jesus, That would be nice. Yeah, a loan agency. I could, you know, borrow some money and get all the heat off. Gee's got a lot of heat on out there. And
well, before I knew it, I was down there at my first meeting, and my sponsor was there, and I forgot I hated him. And he walked up to me, and God love him, he slapped me on the back, and he took me on into my first Alcoholics Anonymous meeting. My sponsor, as you can tell, was a very controversial man. He was a hell of a talker. He talked all over the United States, very set in his ways and his methods. After 8 years in the program, he drank. He drank for 12 years out there, and he got back, and he had a year and a half, and then he died. But he was a hell of a guy and the best sponsor in the world as far as I'm personally concerned, because he was my sponsor, you see. He's the guy that said, I'll meet you at three meetings, and after three meetings, you can make the decision, buddy, whether you want it or you don't want it. Well, at the first meeting I went to, it was the old Temple City group, and I walked in. 70, 80 of the finest drunks in the San Gabriel Valley. A very wealthy group. The way you could tell groups in those days if they had a lot of money was the number of donuts they had. We had donuts before and after the meeting there. That means it's a well-heeled group. They bought three or four of these red jelly donuts, and they always saved them red jelly donuts for new guys, you know. And they watch the door, and they see a guy coming through the door, and he's all green and hung out, and the red jelly donut committee had slid up on him, you know. Glad to see you here. How would you like a cup of coffee and a red jelly donut here? God, alcoholics, after they get sober, they get a warped sense of humor, don't they? Yeah. They all sit around, yeah, you see him? I thought he's going to choke on that donut, yeah. Then the meeting began, and more of this nonsense. The guy stands up in front of the group, and he tells everybody what a jackass he is. And they laugh. People beat him up, they laugh. He goes to jail, they laugh. The more he goes to jail, the more they laugh. He drinks something called Jamaica Ginger. Give him the Jake leg. They were hysterical, you know. My sponsor, he's a nudger. You know, all sponsors are nudgers. He sits there going, oh, did you hear that? Did you hear that? Yeah. Christ, they think you're deaf, you know. You know, you're sitting in the front row. Yeah, good sponsors always push you in the front row. But I want to tell him, you know, you have the guts. I want to tell him, yeah, I can hear all that, but I don't know what the hell the guy's talking about. No, I got to thinking right away, how the hell I qualify for AA? I can't qualify. I ain't got much to tell. I ain't been around much. That guy been 70, 80 jails. He drank all that balderdash out there. Now, I've been in maybe 25 jails, been in a Navy pen, drank a little Vitalis. How the hell I make it? I got nothing to talk about, huh? In those days, I don't mean to digress and go back and sound like any old timer or anything, but by God, when you come in with your wristwatch, where they all stared at it. Yo, how do you get in here with that, you know? Well, I went all through it, and as I said, I thought, well, I won't make it. I'll leave. I can't qualify. And then the guy made a big statement. And all them talkers I ever heard in the early years, they always made sure they made that big statement. They always said, it don't make any difference what you drank or where you drank it, or the amount you consumed or how old you are. He said, man, it's what it's doing to you. And he said, if it's tearing up any part of your life, you don't have to go any farther. And when he said that, I wanted to come out of the chair, and I wanted to say, buddy, it is tearing the hell out of my life. And I don't want to go any farther than I've been. And I look at that guy and I say, I don't have to. That guy says, I don't have to. And I believe him. I look at him and I got to believe him. This guy has been to hell and back. He come off them city streets. I know all about them city streets out there. And he's been in all them jails. And he's making it. He stands there and he's clean and he's sharp and he's happy. And his eyes, they're clear. He's running a set of threads. I bet them threads cost him $150. I'm thinking, man, he didn't get nothing else from AA. Didn't he get a set of drapes out of it? Boy, that's all right. Yeah, I'm going to stick around and get me some drapes, too. I am impressed with what I see. The old cliche, what he is speaks so loud, I cannot hear a word he says. My example is the program, Alcoholics Anonymous. If you like what you see, you come back to get some more. And I liked what I saw that night. I liked that guy. And the only other thing that I remembered about that guy was that he'd had a hell of a time and that his woman had divorced him. And his woman, she remarried. And his kids, they hated him. But then one day, a miracle came to pass. He bought the package. And them kids come down to see him. And they sat there and they learned to like him and they learned to respect him. And then one day they learned to love him. And if I'd have looked around that night, I'd have seen half a dozen of these big, tough AA guys sitting there in that AA meeting, and the tears would be in their eyes, and they wouldn't be ashamed. And they'd just let her go, and they cried, and the story was told. The story of Alcoholics Anonymous, as I understand it.
And maybe it's oversimplification, but it's my understanding of the program that they laughed because they were miserable and they cried because they were happy and they called it Alcoholics Anonymous. Sure. How the hell do you clear away the wreckage of your rotten, lousy past? How do you move that crap out? Doesn't it all begin the day you learn to laugh a little? When a guy comes into the program, man, there's nothing to laugh about. You sit in them meetings, I sat in them meetings. I ain't laughing for none of them, no. And then one day you're going, ha, ha, oh, God, I did it. Don't tell my sponsor I laughed, no. But boy, doesn't it change, huh? You sit there and you laugh a little and you kind of get a little loose and you start feeling things changing and the wreckage of the past maybe starts coming up. And you're not laughing at anybody or yourself, you're just laughing and it's kind of an exhausted laugh maybe, and it's like a guy taking 150 pounds off your back. You start moving it out and put yourself into position to grab and buy the total package of this program. And the package, as I understand it, is the day that you make that big transition, that you quit taking and you start giving. This is a giving thing for taking people. I'm a taker. All my life I'm a taker. I'm a taker of things and a user of people. I'm a loser. All takers are losers. I give nothing to anybody before I got here, but they said this isn't the program of AA. The man stood there that night, I'm sure. I want to believe what he said. Hi, Norm, you're brand new. How are you? Here, I'm going to give you the program. I'm going to give you AA, Norm. I'm going to give you your life, Norm. I'm going to give you sobriety. You didn't buy it, so you can't sell it, Norm. You can give it away, and you can give it away, and you can give it away. And there's a place, you see, for you, Norm. You can pick up the coffee cups or make the coffee. You can be the secretary of a group. There's room for all to give away what you've found. And my destiny today is totally predicated, I'm sure, on what I as an individual am willing to give away. Because this is the giving thing. And everything I heard in the early years, it says to give. You can't keep what you don't give away. To give away. A giving program. A God-given thing given to alcoholics to give away to somebody else. I guess that's what it's all about. It's my understanding. It's my conception of this program. And as I look back, you know, and remember, by golly, you know, the second meeting I went to was damn near the last. The second meeting I went to was over in a town called Pasadena, the old-timers group over there. Had to be sober 10 years to read the steps. The speaker that night, been in AA 137 years, real old-timer, yeah. When he spoke, God love him, I loved him right up to the day he died. When he spoke, he always showed a picture of himself. Great big blown-up mugshot, taking him when he was doing time in the county jail. And the point that he tried to get across was when he was talking, he said, now, look at me when I was drinking, and look at me now. And I look at the picture, and I looked at Arnie, and I thought, Jesus, he looked better drunk, that guy did, yeah. Oh, I've got to get the hell out of this place, yeah. This ages the hell out of these guys, yeah. And I went on out. And I bought a pint of whiskey the next day, and I took a big drag out of it, and I threw it away. And from that day to this, it hasn't been necessary to take the drink. And that was February, about the 23rd of 1954. God moved in strange ways. My sponsor said, I'll meet you at three meetings. I didn't want my sponsor to think I couldn't get to three meetings. And at the third meeting I went to, I bumped into a guy about 26 years old. Another guy about 30. I was 29. A couple other guys were in their early 30s. And we kind of started running the meetings together. We kind of formed our own little group. We noticed, you know, immediately. We had some meetings after the meetings. They're very important. And we noticed that there were a lot of cliques in AA. So we formed our clique to be against some other cliques. That's important right away when you're new. We also noticed they had a lot of flaky leaders and speakers and secretaries of the groups in the San Gabriel Valley. And if we're going to straighten out this San Gabriel Valley, why, we would have to run one of our guys for the secretary. And we didn't want to go halfway, so we decided we'd run him secretary for the largest group in the valley, obviously. But the problem was, in that group, and it was the old Arcadia group, you had to have a year of sobriety. They set us back just for a while, but we waited. And finally, one of our friends got a year of sobriety in, and we ran him for secretary. And they say there's no politics today, eh? But don't you believe that? There was a lot of politicking going around, but they were dealing with some pretty flaky people when they were dealing with us. We went down to El Monte, Baldwin Park on election night. We imported some of our buddies down there. And lo and behold, our man became secretary of that group by a landslide. Can you believe it? And a week later, he joined the other cliques. But it gives you the opportunity then to look around, doesn't it? Huh? You quit sitting in the back of the room and you start moving forward. You start looking around. And what do you see? I don't see nothing clicking here in AA except the clicking in my head. Yeah. All I found in AA is people. People that come from all walks of life. That's what I found.
There's people out there I do no drinking with, and there's a lot of people that do no drinking with me. There's some people I'm not going to share all my sobriety with them, and they're not going to share all their sobriety with me. But you know something? There ain't a man or a woman on this program who would dislike me so bad he'd like to see me take a drink, that if I call him up and said, you know, Charlie, for Christ's sake, will you come to see me? I got to talk to somebody. You know something? He would be there. That guy might disagree with everything I stand for, disagree with my AA life, my business life, my family life, my 12 steps, but would I call him, he'd come and he'd sit, and he wouldn't sit there with pity and hate and the I told you so. He'd sit there with compassion, with understanding, because he wouldn't want to see me go back outside one more time and get torn up in that jungle by that grinder out there. And he would sit and he would help, and that's got to be the best deal that I've ever had in my life. And I love to tell you, from those days forward, everything, every day became a holiday and every meal became a banquet. But that isn't what it is. My sponsor says you're going to get sobriety, a way of life. And we're going to give you the equipment to stand out there, Norm, and be counted just like everybody else. Just because you got some time in the program and you belong to AA doesn't mean that you're going to be exempt from nothing. We'll put you out there and you'll be counted. The difference is, my friend, for some of the decisions you make now, and you will make some, and you'll have to do it sober. And it'll be a touchy thing, and it is tough. 3.5 years in the program, and I made the decision I would have to leave the construction business. I would have to resign from this corporation because I kept being passed by. It got to the point where they needed people with educations. Primarily, they wanted civil engineering people to get up and get the big promotions. I'd been passed by 6 times, and it ate me alive. I got a big ego, and it ate me up. I was working 10 hours a day and hating them 10 hours a day. And it got to the point that I couldn't tolerate anymore, and I got to make that decision. I got to do something. I can't stay. The Serenity Prayer says, accept the things you cannot change, and I couldn't change the company. And it left me one out. I must go. And I walked into my boss, and I says, I'm resigning. Here's my resignation. I'm leaving the company, and here's my 3-week notice. And he says, for Christ's sake, what are you going to do? And I said, I don't know what the hell I'm going to do, because I don't know how to do anything else. I only know how to drive tunnels and lay pipelines and run batch plants, and that's all I know how to do. But I know that there's something out there for guys like me, because people in Alcoholics Anonymous says that's right. They said, Norm, if you have the capacity, remember, if you have the capacity, you can be anybody you want to be, do anything you want to do, if you want it bad enough, and you're willing to make the sacrifices to get it, providing you stay sober. You take care of your sobriety, and these things will take care of itself. Providing the capacity is there. Don't feel, because you have got time and place, that certain presidencies of certain corporations are going to come to pass. No. But if you have the capacity and you are willing to do these things, you will. And so I went out. And I made that turn in 180 degree and a new vocation. And I had tough going for a while. And then all of a sudden it was 1962 and the world is breaking out. And things are going my way. And then by the first quarter of 1962, it took the reversal, and the world came down around me. You know, financially, I'm in the worst shape of my life. Everything I touch turns to pucky. You know the kind of year, yeah. By the middle of the year, I got an honest desire to take a drink. I got an honest desire to take a drink, you know, maybe a 6 times. And I find myself, I'm down in Miami on business, and I'm out of Miami Springs. I went to a meeting, and after the meeting was over, I went down to a gin mill I knew about. I walked in. The bartender says, what do you have? I says, give me a double. And he put it out. And but for the grace of God that looks after damn fools and drunks and people trying to make the program, he didn't find it necessary to snap the angel off my shoulder. He must have sent down some kind of word that says, Norm, if you think it's going tough, if you think it's solely out there today, Norm, remember how it was, buddy. Remember how it was in 46 when you woke up in the tank and they pulled you out and they took you down and they walked you through the courtroom and you stood in front of the judge. And he told you what you were. Remember the humility that you felt, Norm. Remember the grind and the remorse. If you think it's going tough today, then remember 46. And I say, God, when it starts to get tough again, give me the strength to remember the years of 46 and other years that I had out there on those streets. They're very difficult, you know, and I know. It's very difficult when things are going bad to remember those things. By the end of 1946, I had another gigantic heartbreak, grief, disappointment. I walk out of St. Luke's Hospital with this news that these doctors have given me, and I said, Jesus Christ, you can't be right. And he says, I'm right. He says, and this is what has happened. It has happened. It is over, and there's no more. And I couldn't believe it. These things will always happen to somebody else. And I stood out there on the steps, and I says, why me? One more time. He says, buddy, what the hell are you doing? No, I should be exempt. I got 8 years of sobriety.
give this kind of crap to the new guys out there. That's the way I felt about it. No, I don't want any of it. I don't want that heartbreak. I don't want that. I don't want to go no more. I want to stand and cry the poor mouth, and I did. I forgot to remember who I was and where I came from and what it took to bring me there. I forgot to say thanks. Thank you, buddy. I had the opportunity to tell him at 8:15 this morning. I said, thank all my AA friends. And thank you, buddy, for the 22 years you gave me. For the 22 years that you let me walk down the sunny side of the street. Jesus, if I don't get any more than that, I'm overpaid. I know guys that never saw 22 days. They walked the street of booze and fantasy, busted dreams and broken hearts. They died out there in that crap. Always coming from behind. Always got the heat on. When I was drinking out there, the world ran my life. They told me how to operate. They said, you do that. And if you don't do it, we'll take your house. We'll take your car. My woman says, we'll throw you out. My boss says, I'll fire you. Yeah, I lived the way the world wanted me to live, and I ate a lot of it out there because I got to have all these things. I spent a lifetime justifying my existence, and I know guys who spent a lifetime justifying their existence, and one day they died, and they died in them rotten traps, and they never saw 22 weeks or 22 days, and so, you see, I'm overpaid. For 22 years now, I walked out there, and the sun shone all day long. Even though it was raining, the sun was shining, and I was part of the jungle. I was a competitor out there among them. I was respected by myself and respected by people. I'm able to do a job and fill a function, to end up a day and be able to go home to a house where I live, to walk in the house and to be met at the door by a woman, and she's going to be my woman, and she's going to be redheaded, and she's going to be Irish, and she's going to be glad I'm coming in. And she'll respect me because I'm her old man, no more, no less. And nobody will cry at my house today because I'm drunk and tearing it up. I ain't heard a kid of mine scream at me for years for me not to hit their mother. Had the opportunity to raise them bandits up and send them out to school. See them get big educations, and nobody in my family ever cut it that far. Had a couple that went out to the professions. I've taken daughters downtown and bought them their first pair of high-heeled shoes, and I've put them in prom dresses. And I've seen them move from chickens into women. And I've seen them stand there and respect me. Them chickens that became women because I'm their old man. And I've taken a daughter down an aisle. Give her to a guy. Used to be a jackass. He's a dentist now. But the significant part of it all, I guess, was walking down the aisle. When she walks out the door, she's all in white and she's crying. And so she makes me cry. And we're crying like AA guys because we're so damn happy. And as I walked her down the aisle, it was 400 there, and there must have been 70, 80 of my AA buddies out there. And they were crying. And we're all sitting there just crying. And we're looking at each other, and there's that respect. There's that feeling. That feeling that one alcoholic has for another. That thing that you can't describe. How the hell do you describe a feeling? A thing that you and I have for one another because we're making it. The happiness that we profess. I never can. When the guy says years ago, what do you got? I couldn't tell him what the hell I got because I got it all. I can only say, man, every loving thing I got is because of the program, because of the feeling that we have for one another. Every loving thing I might be any time in my life will be because of AA. And but for the grace of God, this program, and friends like you, and friends like them, I could have missed it all. Thanks to me, and God bless you.
Just remain standing, please. I can't listen that fast. I just finished listening to the 20 minutes, the first 20 minutes of it. It'll take me a good while tonight. One thing I failed to tell, the committee asked me to tell those of you who are interested that 578 had registered at banquet time. As soon as we finish with the Lord's Prayer, let's do as the management requested. Let's clear this place so they can make room where we can have the dance. Let's join hand, please, and those who wish, join me in praying the Lord's Prayer. Our Father,
who art in heaven, hallowed be thy name. Thy kingdom come, thy will be done, on earth as it is in heaven. And give us this day our daily bread, and forgive us our trespasses, as we forgive those who trespass against us. And lead us not in temptation, but deliver us from evil. For thine is the kingdom, the power, and the glory, forever and ever. Amen.